This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. You know, when we wear costumes, it is often to celebrate things like Halloween or maybe to root for our favorite sports team. And there's a certain amount of theater in that. But for many places around the globe, masking is a ritual. It's used to invoke the spirit ancestors or to honor religious figures. Phyllis Galembo has been traveling around the world for decades, documenting the culture of masking. Her photographs are featured in the exhibit Theater of Belief, Afro-Atlantic Masking. The exhibit is at the North Carolina State University and Meredith College. Phyllis Galembo is a photographer and a professor at the State University of New York at Albany and joins us now. Phyllis, welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
I want to also welcome Babalawo Ifeanyi Akintunde, who is the founder and chief priest at the Temple of Light and Progress in Durham. Babalawo, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Greetings.
Let me ask you first about this ritual of masking. You know, we talked about kind of what we do in contemporary American society, and we do kind of dress up. It's sort of theater that we're performing. It's a kind of performance. How does masking work in more traditional societies, the societies that you're familiar with?
Well, in traditional society, when one gets in tune with nature, and one gets in tune with their ancestors, there are particular ways that we bring that energy forth. And one of them, like, for instance, in the form of Egungun, which is the ancestral. So every year, a family would bring out the spirit of their ancestor every year. So you have societies that have been developed to actually be the medium between the living and the dead.
What's the importance of the mask, and to what extent is it representational? Does it try to represent particular ancestors? And to what extent is it more, I don't know, I'd say symbolic?
Well, you have national ancestors. See, in African culture, we always believe that when a baby is born, that's an ancestor returning. And so when one crosses back over, many times you'll have ancestral representations of a particular person and or a whole family clan. And so that representation of that family clan or will be brought out in the energy and talked about and, you know, just bringing that whole right. family spirit back together, because we understand that we as a person are a mass conglomeration of thousands and hundreds of years and thousands of people who have come together to make you who you are.
Phyllis, tell us how you became interested in the culture of masquerade.
Well, it goes back a long ways. I have to make one correction. Most of the work I've always done on masquerade and costume has been basically in Africa and throughout the Americas. And I began, you know, first went to Nigeria in 1985, where the early work that I did there had a lot to do with ritual costume and traditional religion. So as a photographer, that was my focus for many years, having gone from Nigeria to Brazil to Haiti to Cuba. And at the same time, is weirdly enough, I was also collecting American Halloween masquerade costumes, thinking one day I would go back to studio photography. So at one point, after having finished that work, I was sort of looking again, you know, wanting to go back to West Africa. And I got sort of re-inspired about working more on the ideas involved with masquerade and costume.
What was it like?
That's a very brief explanation.
Well, and a good one. But what's it like to come in as an outsider? These are very deeply held traditions. And
they're
often,
very deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. They're very deep, and I feel like I'm a very blessed person to have been able to have access to a lot of the things that I've worked on. And I think some of that has to do sort of, you know, these are not new connections for me. You know, like I mentioned before, I first began in 1985, you know, working in Nigeria. So without those sort of connections and having people and various contacts, I don't think I ever could have been able to sort of, you know, gain access to those communities and to those cultures.
Well, I want to talk about some of the photographs and the particulars in this exhibit. And maybe, Awo Ifeanyi, if you would help describe this one, Dance Masquerades. There are people who have their heads covered, eye holes cut out in fabric, and their bodies are covered in a sort of costume. Can you tell me what this was for and what's happening here?
Well, that one I'm not too familiar with, mm-hmm. on that one.
Dance Masquerades. Phyllis, yeah. Is this one that you encountered?
Some of them are also dance groups. There's many different traditions that I've covered in also, which is also in a book I did called Mask, where some of them are also theatrical or acrobatic groups. And sometimes in that particular costume that you're describing, that belongs to one of those groups. And they will also appear during maybe also a family ceremony. And other times there are masquerades that are prepared like for coronations or even at somebody's birthday. They will sometimes bring in various masquerade groups of a different type.
Yeah, if I may. Mm-hmm. Now that you've explained exactly what that picture was, in the Yoruba tradition, you'll call that an ere. Mm-hmm. It's not an official egungun, but it's almost as if people who are training to become carriers of egungun will go through the process of doing an ere. And so you'll find many dance troupes around this country who have ere. In this particular area in North Carolina, Chuck Davis' mm-hmm. dance troupe, you know, they have an ere that they bring out. So one of the things that that the African ancestral piece is, you have the civic, and then also there's that temple spirit, because each Orisha, which is the divine god force in the Yoruba pantheon, has an egungun also, and that will come out during its festival. So there are many levels of how a particular spiritual force, whether it's of nature or of an ancestor of a particular family,
can everyone participate in this, or are there specially trained individuals who are entitled to wear the costumes and the masks?
Well, you have an Egungun society. The Egungun society is made up of both males and females. They have different roles. You have to be initiated into the society to go into the deeper realms of bringing out an egungun. And so you study mediumship. That's all a part of it. Because you have to be able to be a vessel in the egungun society. And understand one thing, the egungun society, the ancestral society that even has jurisdiction over that, is a very nationalistic society. Because all egungun priests and priestesses must learn the traditions of the civilization. You have to learn the psychology, the sociology, the educational systems, the history, the mythology, everything there is to know about a civilization, how to do birthing ceremonies, funerals, how to prepare bodies, you know, for that particular funeral. So it gets very deep in terms of learning prayers, songs, and chants. And it's a lifelong process.
Let me ask you, Phyllis, about another one, because it may mm-hmm. also shed light on what you just said. This one is called Mami Wata, I believe, and it looks like a carved head now. Looks like a carved wooden head, a mask, mm-hmm. and on that are carved wooden figures that are at the top of the head. Maybe you can explain that for us.
Right. Mami Wata is seen throughout also many cultures and many parts of Africa. But particularly in Nigeria, you see in this mask, you see Mami Wata, and she's surrounded by the snake being sort of part of the rainbow serpent deity. So then you have sort of also on this one kind of contemporary figure. So you can see that this is a mask that's still very much used in rituals, which are also part of sort of the religious culture of the traditional people in Nigeria.
Well, and you just raised an interesting question, how when you talked about the contemporary look of some of the figures, how frequently do these masks change? I'll start with you, Phyllis, but I'll ask you as well, whether change is part of this tradition.
I think that it's constantly changing. Many times a mass, like there are certain kinds of Gelidae masks which pay homage to women, and that sometimes the mass will be recycled and maybe it'll come out on a yearly basis and they'll make sort of a new dress for the mass. They'll change it. They'll keep it looking very fresh. And other times, certain kinds of masquerades, like we're talking, I think, about a lot of different things here on my part. Some of the masks will also incorporate sort of contemporary materials. So it's not always the tradition that people may think if they're not as familiar about African masquerade, where they think everything is sort of, you know, maybe a wooden mask that's very static. Everything is sort of evolving, and I'm interested in that, that the traditions still continue and they're very much alive, though they do change.
One of the things that you will find out, and you mentioned Gelidae, and I'm sitting here looking at some pictures of Gelidae, which was brought out in Oyatunji Village in South Carolina during the Women's Festival. And so it's the energy of females, the energy of Yemanja, you know, the energy that brings out. And every year, Gelidae comes out. And Gelidae basically is almost like the town crier. That's one of the things. And so many things that go on in the village all throughout the year come out in one of Gelidae's ceremonies. And sometimes Gelidae tells things that people may not even want to feel anymore. So, you know, that's one of the, you know, you got to stay on the good foot in an African village because your dirty laundry might come out.
Yeah, so there are some personal tales that make the way.
Yeah, Gelidae can bring some things. Yes.
Might even get a song in your honor, too.
That's right.
Or dishonor, depending on how it went for you and your family that year. Well, you talked about the natural world and embodying the natural world as well. Phyllis, I want to ask you about one of the costumes and masks, Atam Masquerader, which appears to be, you know, kind of a camouflage, you know, sort of dressed in the flora and the
That's sort of the temporal masquerades or the things like, you know, that are made all out of leaves and natural materials. I have a great interest for that. So, you know, some of the masks that I photographed were done, you know, where I was able to, you know, photograph the mask by itself. And this was one I happened to have commissioned, which is, you know, something that happens a lot in masquerade. And this one is used, like, say there's a coronation, somebody becomes a chief or receives a special title. This particular masquerade will then appear. And I think the particular photograph is also kind of dramatic because it's at the base of a cotton silkwood tree, which was in the same village that particular masquerade was from.
Awo Ifeanyi, what can you tell us about how the masks are used? It seems that we've been talking a lot about kind of cultural expression, telling people what's going on, about our history, about our contemporary, what's going on in contemporary life. To what extent is it used to contact the spirit world and ask for healing and ask for change that is sort of beyond our control and outside of our history?
Well, one of the things, I'll give you a good example. We had a particular mask in Oyatunji Village. This particular mask was carved in the Congo, and the young men wanted to use this particular mask as an array, you know, in their, you know, their dance troupe.
Areas.
And that's a representation of Egungun. And so when the young men put this mask on, all of a sudden they would get headaches. They would get all kinds of stuff was going on. And then we actually had to do a reading on this particular mask. And it said that this mask had some very sad spirits in it. And so we just don't put on a mask. You might find one in an art gallery or something, and you say, oh, that's nice, I want to bring it home. You might, you know, find masks at different places and flea markets and things. And people put those things on, but they don't know the history of it. And so sometimes it can be dangerous. And so we use the energy of the carving of it, the meaning of it, because whoever carves it is putting their vibration into it. But it's also the vibration of that particular intent. And so the intent is the most important thing. And the whole intent is that our connection to the God force that created us, the natural forces, and also our ancestors.
Are any masks important enough to keep for many, many, many generations in and of themselves? Or is it the representation that can be redone generations later? How important is each
artifact? They're all passed down for generations. And they will come out when the timing is right.
Well, tell us, Phyllis, too, because there are also it's an ongoing process of making these. So it's also happening in these times. Tell us about the process of making them and how much goes into it.
Well, there's a lot. There are only certain people that sort of are, you know, it's sort of their destiny, you know, to be an artist who can actually make a mask. And one thing I was just thinking a second ago was about when sometimes people end up, you know, in Africa, they end up maybe in a refugee camp or they are displaced. You know, one of the things they always make sure they carry with them is their mask. That always goes with them. They usually should never give that up.
You also talked, Phyllis, about your attraction to sort of Halloween stuff and the way these two ideas came together for you. As you think about these traditions and all the work you've done photographing them, and then look at the way we masquerade, whether it's painting mm-hmm. ourselves up in our, you know, for our favorite sports team or Halloween, are there connections? Do you see ways in which these kind of cultural tendencies are alike?
Well, maybe, you know, there are some masks which are much more lighthearted. I don't want to sort of like mix up the two, like the Egungun, those are very spiritual masks, but there's some masquerading traditions that they do in parts of, say, Burkina Faso or Nigeria, where the mask comes out and it's very entertaining. You know, they play with the audience, they interact, they dance. And I have to say, even during the Halloween parade, I've seen masquerades work with the people in those traditions.
Awo Ifani, what about ritual showings? Do we see ritual showings here in the United States?
Oh, all the time. Understand one thing. When we talk about Egungun, you're really talking about a tradition that goes back from the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, here in America, we practice Orisha Vodun, African-Americans. Mm-hmm. And that's a combination of Orisha tradition and Dahomian tradition. And so one of the things that is definitely have to understand is that this is voodoo. The original word is Vodun, which comes out of Dahomey, which means saint. But we are connecting to the natural forces. And so we don't call it masquerade. We call it for what it is. If it's Gelede, we call it Gelede. Mm-hmm. If it's Egungun, we call it Egungun. If it's whatever. But we have national Egunguns here. One of the things, you know, that we bring out every day that represent the national ancestors for this particular Western Hemispheric geographical region.
Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program. Fascinating exhibit. Babalawo Ifeanyi Akintunde is the founder and chief priest at the Temple of Light and Progress in Durham. Phyllis Galembo is a photographer and a professor at the State University of New York at Albany. Thank you both for being on the program.
And thank you.
Thank you.
The exhibit Theater of Belief is at NC State's African American Cultural Center and at Meredith College. For more information, you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Next, talking about the effects of raising the minimum wage. Stay tuned.